Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, June 16th, 2015. We'll have a wrap-up of the AU summit, and children in WOW celebrate the Day of the African Child.
My dream as a child of African is that we're going to have a responsible people in the future because the coming generation are concentrating in education.
Me as an African child, my dream is to have peace in South Sudan.
And health officials appeal for more blood donors.
It doesn't matter where you come from. You may be Kenyan, you may be from Ethiopia or from South Sudan. What matters is that your blood is needed by somebody. There's someone lying in the hospital bed needing your blood urgently.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Heads of state gathered for the African Union Summit in Johannesburg say they made great strides in solving the continent's many problems, which include a political crisis in Burundi. But the meeting was overshadowed by the arrival of Sudan's president, who is wanted by the ICC on genocide charges. VOA's Anita Powell was there from the start and filed this report.
Although Burundi and the violence in South Sudan were discussed, the two-day meeting of African Union heads of state was overshadowed by controversy surrounding the arrival of Sudan's president, who is the subject of an international arrest warrant for genocide. AU Commission Chairwoman Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma explained the decision not to arrest Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir. South Africa had argued that as a head of state attending an AU summit, he enjoyed diplomatic immunity.
Sudan is also a member of the AU, and they always attend, so I'm not sure what's the fuss to be. Because they always attend. We have been in Addis, you know that you always attend. So we, as the AU, there's nothing different. He always attends our summit.
Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe, who is serving this year as AU chairman, said African countries should withdraw from the international court because he believes it unfairly targets African leaders.
There is the view now that we should distance ourselves from the ICC. But unfortunately, the treaty that set it up was signed not by the AU, but by individual countries who thought the ICC was there for doing good to help us try certain other cases, the political violence and so on that would happen in a country, say, during an election campaign. But those of the most signed the treaty are now regretting.
The refusal to arrest Mr. Bashir drew condemnation from U.S. officials, although the United States is not itself a member of the court. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield spoke on the summit sidelines in Johannesburg.
Look, we continue to engage with all the countries across the continent, but also globally to encourage them to honor the requests for Bashir to be turned over to the International Criminal Court. There's a warrant out for his arrest. We have engaged with our colleagues here in South Africa on that issue. But we will continue to have relations with the South African government. This is not going to be an issue that is going to change the nature of our relationship, but we certainly have expressed our views on this particular issue.
And then there was the Burundi issue, whose president did not attend the summit. AU officials say they have made headway on the country's political crisis. AU Peace and Security Commissioner Smail Chergi explained.
They have called consensual political solution to the crisis in Burundi, which needs first the resumption of the dialogue between all the Burundian parties within 1 week following the adoption of the present communique.
The AU summit will convene again early next year at its headquarters in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
In Bor last night, robbers broke into the Catholic Relief Services compound and stole more than 100,000 U.S. dollars and about 90,000 South Sudanese pounds. It's the second attack on a humanitarian agency in the Djongolay state capital in as many weeks. As Jacob Bacek reports for VOA from Bor, officials are calling for stepped-up security at humanitarian agencies.
The state director of the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, Deng Ajuk David, says the money stolen yesterday from the Catholic Aid Agency compound had just been brought to Bor from Juba.
An old gang up group came and they went in to the compound. They came behind the fence, they broke it. They went inside and they went to the final rooms. And then they loot 117,000 U.S. dollars and 90,000 South Sudanese pound that were catch inside. They also took some of the computers and individual cameras.
The money was intended to fund the operation of Catholic Relief Services, or CRS, in Bor. The thief had been reported to Djongolay State Criminal Investigation Department, or CID. So far, no one has been arrested in connection with the thief, but the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission office says it is working very hard with investigation to ensure that the suspects are apprehended. The attack is the second seen last week to target relief agencies in Bor. On Friday, a gang set fire to the Bor warehouse of the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization, or FAO. No one has been arrested in connection with the attacks either. Officials believe the attacks on the FAO facilities and yesterday's burglary at the CRS compound are linked.
It is the same group, I think, which is expected. According to some of the eyewitness, those who are around there, they said that this group, they work at night and they are wearing non-uniform and then they are carrying guns.
An administrator for the State Criminal Investigation Department says investigators opened a primary probe into the burglary but did not have full operation for CRS staff.
When we make a primary investigation, we try to call the cashier who is the keeping the money, but the CRS manager, he refused to give us the cashier. So we replied back the case to them because nobody opened the case.
Ajuk says the state government must set up protection of NGOs and other humanitarian organizations in Djongolay State. He says aid agencies in Bor town should not have to operate under the threat of violence.
I think the best way is to increase the security and power and look the way they can put up the compound in a way that no intruder can enter and tie themselves with the plan. I think we are going to work on it today, maybe or tomorrow. And the head office in Juba will still be concerned. And then we'll see the way forward.
The Catholic Relief Services compound in Bor was also broken into in November 2 years ago. In that burglary, thieves stolen computers and other office supply. No one has been arrested in connection with that incident. Also in 2013, more than 100 South Sudanese pounds were stolen from the office of the Zain Telecommunication Company in Bor. The thief fired several rounds into the safe to get the money. But police who regularly patrolled the part of Bor town where that burglary occurred said they did not note any unusual activities. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Acek in Bor.
Hundreds of children gathered in the western Bahar El Ghazal capital today to mark the Day of the African Child. This year's theme is child marriage and the need to end the practice. Dimo Silva Ariello has the story for VOA from WOW.
The Day of the African Child has its origin in apartheid, South Africa. It remembers the day in 1976. When thousands of school children took part in a protest in Soweto Township against injustices in the education system and inequality. 176 of the young stars were killed, and in 1991, the African Union declared June 16th the annual Day of the African Child, in memory of those who lost their lives 15 years earlier in Soweto. Today's event in WAO was organized by the State Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Development. Children carried banners calling for an end to many of the injustices they are confronted with as they seek to build a future for themselves and their families. Among those injustices is child marriage. A report released in 2013 by Human Rights Group says just under half of South Sudanese girls between the age of 15 and 19 are married, with some forced into marriage as young as age 12. Human Rights Watch says in the report that child marriage widens the already large gender gap in school enrollment in South Sudan, contributes to soaring maternal mortality rates, and violates the right of girls to be free from violence. In spite of the challenges they face, many of the children at the event in WAO have not lost hope for the future.
Me as an African child, I'm dreams South Sudan to be good in community, to be in peaceful way.
My dream as a child of African is that we're going to have a responsible people in the future, because the coming generation are concentrating in education, fighting corruption and tribalism going to end. That's all my dream.
Me, I, as an African child, I wish to see comprehensive peace and quality to education in South Sudan. And I wish people of South Sudan to love themselves. That is my dream in life.
Me, as an African child, I want to become a doctor so that I help people who have dangerous disease.
Naima Abbas is Western Baal Ghazal's Gender, Child and Social Development Minister. She says hundreds of the children in the state have no access to education, medical care, or good nutrition. Too many children live on the street or are forced by their parents or guidance into early marriage to escape poverty, Abbas says. She says all of these injustices happen in spite of the fact that South Sudan's children are protected by law.
The Constitution of South Sudan has given rights to children. The state laws also gave the same rights. The child has the right to have a name, nationality, education, health, and expression.
But Arcangelo Amatu, the state's director for child protection in the Gender Ministry, says the legal statutes protecting children are not enforced, partly because few adults are aware of what the laws say.
As we need that child rights should be designated at the community level, and it be even translated if we can translate it in our local language, so that the people should intercept child rights. Yes, this is what happened to child rights. Child rights also have a problem of, you know, it's supposed to be there, the institution which is implemented child act, like a juvenile court, and then especially prosecutor for the children, and then a special police unit for the children.
Amatu says the statistic for Western Baal Ghazal from last year saw that 100 cases of child rape were reported in the state each month. It is unclear if all those cases involve children being forced into marriage. Amatu says until South Sudan establishes a legal minimum age for marriage, it will be hard for activists to successfully campaign to end the practice of marrying of children. Human Rights Watch says in its 2013 report that many South Sudanese see early marriage as being in the best interest of girls and their families. The report says many parents in South Sudan see marriage as a way to access resources, such as keto, which are traditionally paid to the families of girls in the form of dowry. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting in WAO.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Hundreds turn out in Juba for Blood Donor Day, but did most of them give blood? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite traditional folk story about?
About Anansi. Spiders, there are some way. Their stories are nice. Anansi has its own way of doing things, deceiving people and stuff. So it helps you to know the tricks of some people.
One of the favorite stories I picked up, The Hare and the Hyena. I like how tricky the hare, the character plays, being his role, like how he has been personificated. He's a very tricky character, so I used to enjoy that.
My favorite story is about Miss Ear and Mr. Mosquito. Mr. Ear wanted to marry Miss Mosquito. Miss Ear said that, Mosquito, you have tiny leg. How can I marry you? I cannot marry you to be a widow in future. That's why, you see, when you're sleeping, sometimes you hear a mosquito coming to your ears and making that sound. Eh?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about blood donations. Hundreds of people joined health officials in Juba today to mark World Blood Donor Day. They are calling on more citizens to donate blood. Officials say having enough stored blood will help prevent deaths in South Sudan. But while teaching the public about the importance of donating, officials are also trying to stamp out the illegal practice of selling blood. Megumi Davis-Rockwinch has more for VOA from Juba.
Dozens of people donated blood as part of World Blood Donor Day at the National Blood Bank Center here in Juba, including 21-year-old Kenyan businessman Geoffrey Dixon Joroge.
It doesn't matter where you come from. You may be Kenyan, you may be from Ethiopia or from South Sudan. What matters is that your blood is needed by somebody. There's someone lying in the hospital bed needing your blood urgently.
The last time Joroge donated blood was while he was a student in Kenya. Another donor is 24-year-old Fikira Juliet from Munuki. She explains why she got involved.
Once we went to Juba Teaching Hospital, people are really suffering. Like there's one time we went there, we find there are some, those who got accident, those who got injured, they are suffering. So they need help. I find really there are women who need help. They are really suffering from there. They look stressed.
Joseph Lukak, head of Central Equatoria State South Sudan Red Cross, says this day helps health officials to educate the masses and dispel myths about blood donation.
Before they came here, I think there's a lot of misconception outside there. They say, no, I cannot donate my blood. I don't have enough blood. I can die and some kind like that. But if they come here, of course, in the reception, as you have seen, they are giving all the necessary information. They give detailed information about the importance of blood donation.
World Health Organization says in 2013, there were about 3.9 million units of blood available in Africa. WHO says this is about 50% of the blood units required for patients in African hospitals. 65% of blood transfusions in low-income countries are given to children under 5 years of age. Dr. Makur Matur Karium, the undersecretary in the Ministry of Health, says reducing South Sudan's high maternal mortality rate can only happen if people donate their blood.
If we want to reduce maternal mortality or the death of the mothers during pregnancy, there's no magic, and nobody will ever come from any other place to come and do it for us. We have to do it. And each and every one of us who may not have much to do in designing the policies for reducing maternal mortality can do so by donating a unit of blood. And by so doing, you will have saved hundreds of lives.
According to the United Nations Development Programme, South Sudan continues to have the highest maternal mortality rate in the world at 20,054 per 100,000 live births. Karium says their goal is to raise at least 1,000 units of blood this year. But Karium acknowledges there's a dark side to the business of blood donation. It involves some health workers who take advantage of people in desperate need of a blood transfusion.
People are talking about it, that at times when they come to the hospital and they need blood, some elements within the profession working at that particular hour demand money from the patients or their relatives. And that's the warning we pass out today. We ask the public to work with us to assist in apprehending those elements.
Karium says those workers will be arrested and imprisoned. Since the blood bank opened about a year ago, Karium says at least 300 people have donated blood. The theme of this year's campaign is "Thank you for saving my life." It encourages donors around the world to give blood regularly. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Juba.
A new research project focuses on Africa's capacity to prevent, contain, and resolve conflicts like the ongoing struggle in South Sudan. The Canadian-based Center for International Governance Innovation says a better understanding is needed of the dimensions of armed conflict and power struggles. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The center, known as CG, has released a report called Conflict in Africa, Diagnosis and Response. It considers how political violence, weak institutions, ethnicity, religion, and identity contribute to conflict on the continent. Former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Chester Crocker, is a distinguished fellow with CG's Global Security and Politics Program.
We were not only looking at violent extremism, we're looking at other kinds of conflict patterns that exist, including conflicts that are spawned by criminal networks, conflicts that are aggravated by pirates and by traffickers, conflicts that are simply based on identity struggles and struggles for power between different competing groups. What's going on in Burundi right now is basically a power struggle.
As for violent extremism, the U.S., France, and others have helped African countries deal with the threat. But Crocker says a military response is not enough. The root causes must be addressed.
In some cases, what happens is that there's a weak state with a limited capacity in remote areas of a country. We've just seen that pattern in Nigeria with Boko Haram. And you know that some of the people who get recruited and sucked into those kind of movements like Boko Haram basically don't have any other career options. And they're unemployable and unemployed, and the government has ignored them. You know, nature abhors a vacuum, and Boko Haram has filled it.
Crocker says Boko Haram militants understand how to lure recruits.
We can help you. We can deliver things to you. We can give you jobs. We can give you guns, that sort of thing. So, as I just said, you got to watch out for vacuums. Vacuums are dangerous. And so the answers are not just military. They're also in terms of governance in a broad sense.
The CG report describes Africa's conflicts as diverse and complex, and efforts at managing and resolving them are mixed.
I don't think anyone from the outside world can solve those problems, but we can certainly partner with African partners in helping to deal with them. And we do it, I would say, both institutionally and we do it selectively. And this is not charity. This is not dependence. This is mutuality and interdependence between African states and societies and Africa's friends outside.
The Georgetown University professor of strategic studies says closer cooperation benefits all involved.
We don't want to see bad guys get established in more areas of Africa. It's not good for the West. It's not good for Europe. It's not good for the United States, for that matter, or for the Middle East. We also don't want to see more boat people desperately becoming the victims of traffickers and drowning in the Mediterranean. So there's lots of reasons to be engaged.
Crocker says a regional approach is needed to address many of Africa's problems.
I think the toughest problems that Africa faces in the security space are regional problems, where you have a large state that finds it difficult to provide governance all the way across the country, for example, the DRC. That becomes a regional problem for the DRC's neighbors and vice versa. They interfere across borders in both directions. It's also a regional question when you look at the Sahel and the armed militias that have sprung up in the wake of the overthrow of Gaddafi in Libya.
The Conflict in Africa report recommends ending power struggles, like in Burundi, by using incentives to negotiate an agreement or consent to elections, rather than using force to settle the dispute. For weak institutions, it calls on donors to focus on building up more representative and responsive governmental institutions. And for identity divisions, the CG report recommends NGOs and others help build relationships between antagonists through dialogue, people-to-people programs, and problem-solving workshops. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The massive migration from Africa has been in the news for several months now and was one of the big topics discussed by African leaders at the AU summit. They say the solution is development. VOA's Anita Powell has more on that story from Johannesburg.
Thousands of kilometers from the plush environs of the African Union summit, more than 100,000 African migrants in tiny, barely watertight boats have recently crossed the treacherous waters of the Mediterranean Sea in a desperate bid for a new life in Europe. The International Organization for Migration estimates that more than 102,000 people have attempted such a voyage this year alone. Most migrants come from sub-Saharan Africa, but not all have made it. More than 1,800 people have drowned in the Mediterranean this year. Regional leaders at the African Union Summit, held this year in South Africa, say the problem starts at home. Migrants often say they are fleeing problems like conflict, unemployment, and unfair treatment at home. South African President Jacob Zuma says leaders are responsible for this.
In recent times, we have all witnessed painful and shameful images of our African brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, and children dying during unsafe passage across the Mediterranean Sea, trying to reach the shores of Europe in order to find better sanctuary from wars, poverty, abuse, and unemployment, among others. This is an indictment to all of us and calls for us to realize that although we have done so much to improve the living standards of our people, there is a need to double our efforts and ensure that our people are pulled to their motherland and contribute towards its development.
African Union Chairwoman Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma said there is hope if African nations commit to development.
If we educate and skill our people with an emphasis on science, engineering, technology, maths, research, and innovation, including technical and vocational skills, our people will stop undertaking the perilous journeys across the Sahel and the Mediterranean. When we undertake this skills revolution, extremist armed groups and terrorists will find it difficult, if not impossible, to recruit our young men and women.
And Mr. Zuma says he believes Africa has what it takes.
Africans have contributed its fair share towards the growth of humanity and remains one of its greatest assets. Africans possess all the attributes, resources, and skills to live better lives than today. We just need to double our efforts and offer the next generations a future they will be proud of.
But this pressing topic, which was originally promised to be one of the main points of discussion at the two-day meeting of African heads of state, has been overtaken by controversy over the arrival of Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir. Mr. Bashir is the target of an international arrest warrant that compels South Africa, as a member of the International Criminal Court, to detain him. South Africa has said he is a guest and enjoys diplomatic immunity as a participant in the summit. A South African court issued an urgent order to keep him in the country until his arrest appeal could be heard, but his plane was seen leaving without any problems or hindrance on Monday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Surayako by Sauti Sol. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for joining us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Sitasizi moyo wangu ni mwepesi umenikalia chapati nafanya vitu